Well, good morning, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to our interview this week. I am Tunli Nazapadat, will be the moderator for today's session. This week, we will discuss on the topic regarding the importance and opportunity of Cambodia-Australia relations, as well as the commemoration of the 70th anniversary of diplomatic relations between Cambodia and Australia. We are very honored today to have His Excellency Pablo Gang, the Australian Ambassador to the Kingdom of Cambodia, as our special guest speaker for today's discussion. Greetings, Excellency, and welcome to our interview program. Without further delay, I would like to kick off our discussion by posing the first question to Excellency. Excellency, this year, 2022, marks the 70th anniversary of Cambodia-Australia diplomatic relation, which this tie has established since 1952. So first of all, from your observation, what have the two countries' government prepared to celebrate their 70th anniversary of these diplomatic relations?
Sure, thank you for the question. And you're correct, this year is the 70th anniversary. Diplomatic relations were established in January 1952. Which, as you would know, is about a year before Cambodia's formal independence from France. So it's a very long-standing relationship. And, of course, it started off as a diplomatic exchange of representation, but it's grown over time to be a relationship that's very much founded on people-to-people connections. So we talk about governments and relationships between governments all the time, but I think the foundation of any bilateral relationship is the relationship between the peoples of the two countries, and that's certainly the case in terms of the Australia-Cambodia relationship. Now, at the embassy here in Phnom Penh, we saw early on that this was an important milestone to celebrate, to acknowledge, to use the platform for strengthening the relationship further into the future. So we organised a number of things. I mean, I think first and foremost was just initial announcement back in January this year, at the time of the specific date anniversary, that it was our 70th anniversary. I hosted a dinner with Excellency Deputy Prime Minister and Foreign Minister Prat Sokhon and some of his senior staff. We talked about the relationship, how it's grown, how it's developed, the prospects we have for the future. Shortly after that was our National Day, so Australia Day, which is on the 26th of January. I hosted a large reception to mark Australia Day, and at that we formally launched our logo for the anniversary. I don't know if your viewers will be aware of or have seen the logo. I'm actually wearing a lapel pin, which describes or depicts the logo, but, you know, probably hard to see. But what it is, basically, it's the national animal of Australia, a kangaroo, and the Southern Cross, which is a constellation which is on our national flag behind me, and on the Cambodian side, a depiction of Angkor Wat and a kukre, the national animal of Cambodia. So we launched that logo. And we've done a number of events since then. Most particular was a series of events, over a period of 10 days, which was the visit of Lieutenant General John Sanderson, the former force commander of the United Nations Transitional Authority in Cambodia, and his wife, Mrs. Lorraine Sanderson, both very distinguished Australians and with a very strong connection to Cambodia, given the work of UNTAC in the early 1990s. So the Sandersons were here for about 10 days. We hosted a number of events, including a photographic exhibition, which lasted for a month at the Royal Hotel in Phnom Penh to mark the 30th anniversary of UNTAC and, in particular, Australia's contribution to UNTAC. So that was a very important event. We took the Sandersons to Battambang, Siem Reap, and Alung Veng as well, to see the developments in that part of Cambodia. Both of them met with Prime Minister Hun Sen and had lunch, met a number of other deputy prime ministers and ministers, met with civil society, conducted a number of media interviews, and also General Sanderson received an honorary doctorate from the University of Cambodia. So it was a very significant visit, and one that was very much tied in with not just the 30th anniversary of UNTAC, but the 70th anniversary of our bilateral relationship, our diplomatic relationship. We do have a number of other events that we are planning for the rest of the year. This includes the launch of a major new economic resilience program as part of our development cooperation with Cambodia. That's called CAP Red. That's an $87 million program, which we aim to launch in the next few months. It's primarily aimed at helping Cambodia to build its economic resilience on trade, investment, agriculture, infrastructure, gender equality and social inclusion into the future. It's a five-year program. We also hope to be able to launch a new Australian supermarket here in Phnom Penh, again, in the next couple of months, organising an Australian food and beverage event to showcase some of the best of Australian food and beverage that we have here in Cambodia. And at the end of this month, from the 28th of June until the 3rd of July, we are sponsoring in a major way the Cambodian International Film Festival. It will be the 13th edition of the film festival here in Phnom Penh, and there will be a range of up to 15, I think, Australian films screening at the festival, as well as Australian filmmakers that will be here and an Australian film critic as well. So that will be, again, part of the 70th anniversary. So looking forward to all these events over the next few months.
So, thank you, Excellency, for highlight the background and also the history of the relation between Cambodia and Australia. Excellency, we have witnessed that the diplomatic tie between Cambodia and Australia has been a long-lasting relationship for seven decades now. So under this cooperation and long-lasting diplomatic ties, what significant events have occurred during the past 70 years? And in the future, what areas should the two countries further expand their cooperation?
Sure. Well, I think initially the relationship started with the first Cambodian students who went to Australia to study at Australian universities. I think the first student was in 1954, and there's been obviously a long history since then of Cambodian students graduating from Australian universities. Initially, it was under a program called the Colombo Plan, which the Australian government set up in the 1950s to bring students from the Asia Pacific, which was then still recovering in many ways from the aftermath of the Second World War, to provide opportunities for exposure to Australian education. Of course, fast forward into the 60s, we had a lot of agriculture cooperation and irrigation cooperation with the then government here. Of course, with the Khmer Rouge period, certainly our relationship was on hold, as you would expect, for quite a while. But Australia worked very closely and had a really major role in helping to bring about the re-emergence of the prospects of peace in Cambodia, initially through again, as I said, a major role in shaping the Paris Peace Agreements, negotiating and brokering the final versions of the Paris Peace Agreements, which were signed in October 1991. Then, as I mentioned before, in relation to General Sanderson, a very significant contribution to the United Nations Transitional Authority that was born out of the Paris Peace Agreements. We had over 1,200 Australians who served with UNTAC, and with UNAMIC, actually, before UNTAC, so from the period of, 1991 up until 1993. Also, during that period of UNTAC, the Australian Centre for Education was established here in Cambodia as a way of providing English language training to Cambodians, and it continues to this day. It's obviously celebrating its 30th anniversary this year as well. It continues to grow, expand the number of campuses and students, tens of thousands of students who now study at the Australian Centre for Education. So that's been another significant event, if you like, the establishment and growth of that institution. We also, speaking of institutions, helped establish CARDI, the Cambodian Agricultural Research Development Institute in the late 1990s. That was a product of many years of agricultural cooperation between Australia and Cambodia, and we continue to support CARDI to this day. We've put a lot of effort into its research capacity, especially in relation to, for example, different types of rice, in relation to the different techniques in terms of planting and developing and then exporting rice and other high-value crops from Cambodia. Another, I think, significant event was the establishment of the first international satellite link in Cambodia in 1990, and that was through an Australian telecommunications company, which is now called Telstra, one of our largest telecommunications companies. In the aftermath of the Khmer Rouge period, Australia very much supported the Khmer Rouge tribunals. In fact, after Cambodia and Japan were the third largest donor to the United Nations tribunal process for trying senior leaders of the former Khmer Rouge. And we have also, since 1994, provided over $100 million to support the demining of Cambodia, removing landmines and other explosive remnants of war, especially in the western, northwestern provinces, Battambang, Pailin and Bantay Menche. And we continue to support Cambodia's goal to become mine-free by 2025. So they're just some of the events, programs, developments that have occurred over the past 70 years. In the future, I think, as you asked, in terms of expansion of cooperation, we'd very much like to expand our trade and investment footprint two ways. And I know you'll ask me a bit more about that later. But I think as Cambodia, like many other countries, recovers from the COVID-19 pandemic, it's also thinking about what kind of economy it's going to look like in the future in order to meet the government's objectives of Cambodia becoming an upper middle income country by 2030 and a high income country by 2050. Because I think what the pandemic has shown is that the traditional ways of growing the economy, which have been very successful up until the pandemic, may not necessarily be the ways that the economy will continue to grow in the future. And I'm mainly talking about how does Cambodia further digitalize its economy and adapt to the global industrial revolution 4.0. I know the government here thinks very seriously about these issues, and I think our trade investment relationship will have to adapt and take into account those shifts in the way economies, not just here but around the world, project themselves. But that's very much what we'd like to see as Cambodia transitions into that higher middle income and eventually a high income economy. Clearly, our relationship will transition. We won't have as significant a development cooperation program as we do now, because Cambodia will have essentially graduated from requiring a lot of that assistance, but then the focus will then shift into more of a commercial footing. So that's where I see our cooperation expanding.
Thank you, Excellency. Talking about COVID-19 pandemic, as you mentioned earlier, so what do you think about the relation between Cambodia and Australia in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic? Do you think it is the opportunity for both country, or it is the negative thing for both country?
Obviously, if you look at the pandemic in general, you would say, you know, would we have preferred not to have had it? Yes. So in that sense, the pandemic was a negative thing for everybody, right? But if you look at what positives we can take out of that experience, I think certainly from our perspective, from Australia's perspective, we thought that given Australia lives as part of the Indo-Pacific region, We're not an outside observer. We're very much part of the region. And so the economic and the health well-being of countries in our region directly impacts our own economic and health well-being. So as we like to say, we're not safe. Australia's not safe from COVID until everyone is safe, certainly in our neighbourhood. So that's the approach that we took, and that's why the Australian government developed what we called a Partnerships for Recovery strategy, and a big focus of that was on ensuring that whatever we do in the development cooperation space with our neighbours is appropriate and targeted to assisting countries to manage the pandemic and then recover and grow out of it. In Cambodia's case, we established a Cambodian development response plan, and that was mutually agreed between the Australian government and the Cambodian government. And basically we said, we agreed that here are the priority sectors that we're going to be focusing on through our development cooperation. Firstly, there are three. Firstly, health security, of course, the major focus. Secondly, programs that would support social stability. And thirdly, programs that would support economic recovery. And on health security, we've been fortunate, as I say, when I say that, I mean Australia's been fortunate that we have been working with Cambodia's health sector for over two decades now, and we're a strong supporter of a program that's aimed to strengthen Cambodia's health system in general and to provide incentives for hospitals and health centres to improve their performance, to elicit better feedback from clients, and to then be able to access increased funding from the government. It's a program called the Health Equity and Quality Improvement Program, or HEQIP, managed by the World Bank with a number of donors, including Australia. And, of course, we continue to do that because notwithstanding COVID, you know, people still get sick and need to go to hospital or to health centres for a range of other reasons completely unrelated to COVID. So we wanted to make sure that the health system was, we do what we can to ensure that the health system is able to cope not just with COVID, but with, you know, other ailments, diseases, operations, issues that present themselves as they would normally do in Cambodia. But specifically on COVID, we realized early on that the main way out of the pandemic, well, there are a number of ways, but firstly is public awareness and education. People needed to know how to socially distance, that they should be wearing masks, you know, how to, you know, ventilation, how, you know, the three do's and the three don'ts, how to basically minimize the risk of contracting COVID. But then also the main other way that people, of course, would either minimize the risk of contracting COVID or minimize the effects or the symptoms is through vaccinations. So we made a commitment early on, I think it was about February 2021, that we would look to supply Cambodia with COVID vaccines. There were quite a few challenges in terms of the global supply chain being able to access vaccines, especially the much sought after mRNA vaccines like the Pfizer vaccine. But we were able in December last year to provide Cambodia with 2.35 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine, which the Cambodian government immediately deployed as booster doses for people who had already had their primary dose of whatever vaccine it happened to be. That the booster, generally it was the fourth dose, would be through the Pfizer vaccine, and we were the first country or international organisation to bring the Pfizer vaccine into Cambodia. The Pfizer vaccine itself is quite a... it's quite a unique vaccine, requires some unique storage rules, and that includes being kept in freezers that enabled the temperatures to go down to about minus 80 degrees. So we were able to also provide over 133 freezers, some of which were ultra cold, minus 80 degree freezers, others of which were minus 20 degree freezers. And that enabled the Ministry of Health here to take the Pfizer vaccine out of Phnom Penh and to distribute it to the provinces, and the people could get vaccinated in the provinces without having to come back to Phnom Penh. And that was very important, and I saw that firsthand. I saw people in Ratanakere being vaccinated in that way. So that's been, I think, although nobody wanted to have COVID, nobody wanted this pandemic, I think it has helped further strengthen, in our case, our relationship with Cambodia, because both from a broad development cooperation perspective, but also from a very specific COVID vaccine and awareness and delivery perspective, I think we were able to certainly help with Cambodia's management of COVID, its response to COVID, and I think that's helped our relationship more broadly.
Thank you, Excellency. The year 2022 is also the year of Cambodia's rotating chair of ASEAN. So as of now, the question is, what has Australia contributed to Cambodia's ASEAN chairmanship in addressing issues facing the region and urging Cambodia to host the ASEAN summit and related meetings successfully in the future?
Thank you. Well, as you said, 2022 is a very important year for Cambodia. And just as it's our 70th anniversary of the bilateral relationship, Cambodia is also chairing ASEAN. And we've tried to support Cambodia in that role as much as we can. But I think it's important to point out what Cambodia has done for Australia in the ASEAN context. Cambodia is a very strong supporter, for example, of having annual ASEAN-Australia summit, so annual ASEAN-Australia leaders meetings, and the first in-person meeting will be in Cambodia in November, which our Prime Minister will attend. Also, Australia and ASEAN have agreed to a comprehensive strategic partnership. That decision was made by ASEAN last year, very much again with the strong support of Cambodia. So, you know, we value very much our relationship with ASEAN. We actually ASEAN's longest standing dialogue partner. We became a dialogue partner of ASEAN back in 1974, which is 25 years before Cambodia joined ASEAN. And so we've always valued the relationship with ASEAN because, of course, Southeast Asia is a very important part of the region that Australia is in. I think in announcing or in securing ASEAN's agreement to a comprehensive strategic partnership, we also announced some related initiatives, including our Australia for ASEAN initiatives. That's $154 million Australian dollars of new initiatives designed to improve our relationship with ASEAN. That includes things like, for example, providing scholarships to 100 emerging leaders from across ASEAN to study in Australia on topics that are connected directly to the ASEAN outlook on the Indo-Pacific. It also enables some 350 technical and vocational education and training scholarships to be provided to people from ASEAN countries. We've also jointly agreed through the Australia for ASEAN initiatives to work together on projects that are agreed between both Australia and ASEAN, so that's what I mean, jointly agreed, in areas such as climate change mitigation and adaptation, health security, addressing the ongoing challenge of transnational crime, ensuring that our oceans are healthy, ensuring that we are positioned well to meet the energy transition that is already underway towards a renewable future, and supporting the concept of the circular economy. So these are all things that we have been trying to support ASEAN with from a financial and technical capability perspective. Of course, as chair this year, Cambodia will have a number of difficult issues to manage. Of course, AVI has talked about them at length and will continue to do so. These include traditional sensitive issues such as the North Korean nuclear situation, the competing claims in the South China Sea. But of course, more recent unfortunate developments such as the coup in Myanmar last year and the Russian invasion of Ukraine this year. These are issues that ASEAN unavoidably will have to deal with, and we will provide as much support as we can for that process. We also wanted to recognise that these are issues that have come up that have been a bit unforeseen, and Cambodia's chair year this year also had some broader topics, not just reactive but proactive, that it wanted to focus on, such as COVID-19 economic recovery, such as women in leadership, and we're very strongly supportive of that as well. Cambodia is going to be chairing an ASEAN Women Leaders Summit in October this year, and Australia is already providing both financial and technical support for that summit to proceed successfully. It fits very much in with our broader shared goals around gender equality. Also, we have a free trade agreement between Australia, New Zealand and ASEAN, and the aim of this year under Cambodia's chairmanship again is to upgrade that free trade agreement. It was signed over 10 years ago, and to bring it, make it more relevant to, as I talked about before, the changing economic structures of a lot of countries, in particular emerging from the COVID pandemic. So there's a lot that we are doing with ASEAN and with Cambodia as chair to hopefully ensure that this year's chair year is as successful and productive as possible.
So moving forward to the trade sector, as we know, Cambodia and Australia are both members of the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement, RCEP, which is the largest trade agreement in the region as well as the world. In this regard, what economic and trade opportunity can you see that it can provide to both countries within the framework of RCEP and also the Cambodia-Australia cooperation?
Yes, you're right. In fact, Australia and Cambodia both ratified RCEP on the same day. And yes, it is the world's largest free trade agreement at the moment, and it certainly brings a lot of opportunity for all members, and including Australia and Cambodia. I would say that both Australia and Cambodia will stand to benefit significantly from RCEP because the nature of both our economies is that we are both quite open, and we both have quite open, already liberalised trading regimes. You know, we have a very open outlook. We're not one of these countries or trading blocks that has a lot of tariffs and quotas and non-tariff barriers. We have a pretty liberalised approach to our economies. We think that trade liberalisation is the best way to grow our own economies and more broadly global prosperity. So I think RCEP will be good for that. Also, I think a lot of the trade in the Cambodian and Australian economies is driven by services. It's not completely a trade in goods or trade in products alone, but trade in services. Things like tourism, very important, of course, for Cambodia's longer-term economic prosperity. And as I mentioned before, education, which is one of Australia's largest services exports. So I think RCEP will have quite a big focus on services liberalisation as well as traditional liberalisation objectives in terms of trade in goods, trade in products. I think the plan for RCEP is certainly to, for example, simplify a lot of customs processes in its different member countries, and also reducing those sort of traditional barriers to trade, encourage greater predictability consistency and transparency, which we hope will have the effect of obviously boosting business confidence, and through that economic recovery from COVID. I think RCEP will also support regional value chains, so not just value chains within one country, but across the region. And I think the way it can do this is to provide, which is what it's set up to do, a single set of rules and procedures in order to access preferential trading rates. And, you know, Cambodia as a manufacturer should benefit from RCEP in terms of strengthening Cambodia's position on regional supply chains, making the movement of goods a lot easier across borders, also by increasing investment as traders look to see what's the most efficient and cost-effective source for their inputs. So it certainly does have a lot of potential, and I think as both Australia and Cambodia seek to capitalise on RCEP, as well as what I mentioned previously, the upgrade to the Australia-New Zealand-ASEAN Free Trade Agreement, that should have a flow-on benefit to our bilateral trade as well. And, you know, as Cambodia transitions its economy towards that kind of upper middle income status, those trading relationships and those investment relationships will become increasingly more important.
So thank you, Sir Excellency. You have highlighted enough on the background as well as what is going on and what will happen amid this year of the commemoration of the 70th anniversary of the Cambodian Australian diplomatic ties. So last but not least, what is your last words to our audience in the occasion of the commemoration of the 70th anniversary of Cambodia-Australia diplomatic relations?
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to AVI and to your audience. I think my main point, and you know, it comes out through the fact that we are celebrating 70 years this year, is that Australia has been a very long-standing friend and partner of Cambodia. Cambodia has a range of Cambodia has a range of international friends and partners. Some are newer than others, and Australia is one that has been there for right back even before independence, and we've come on quite a long journey since then. And I think that when Cambodians think about the relationships they have with other countries, I think it's it would be good to remember that Australia is Australia and Cambodia are part of the same region. We're both part of the Indo-Pacific region. We have a very strong and rich historical legacy, people-to-people legacy. We have over 66,000 Australians who have Cambodian background in Australia, which is a very large diaspora for us. And then there's a lot of potential moving into the future as our two countries continue to evolve and expand. So I think it's very positive, and hopefully recovering from COVID-19, which is the first priority, will set both of our countries up well for the next 70 years and beyond.
So thank you so much, Excellency. Ladies and gentlemen, our interview today has now come to an end. And once again, I would like to pay my sincere appreciation to Excellency Ambassador Pablo Gang for your valuable time and your kind contribution joining us today to provide a very profound discussion and comprehensive views on the topic, the importance and opportunity of Cambodia-Australia relation and the celebration of the 70th anniversary of the diplomatic relation. So thank you for joining us, and I look forward to talking to you again on the future episode of our program.
Okay, welcome to that.
Thank you so much. Stay safe and have a nice day, Excellency.
You too.
Yes, thank you.